evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 15, 2015. President Kiir continued to complain today about the peace agreement, which he says he was forced to sign.
This IGAD prescribed peace document on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan is the most divisive and unprecedented peace deal ever seen in history.
And authorities in Central Equatoria State are meeting to address insecurity in Lanya County.
The committee will then make some findings as to what were the causes of this incident and the extent of the damage that has happened, particularly if there's any damage to our citizens.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir says he was under intense pressure last month to sign the peace deal brokered by IGAD Plus to end 20 months of conflict in South Sudan. In a speech to the nation today, Mr. Kiir said he continues to have serious reservations about the peace agreement, but signed it anyway for the good of South Sudan and the nation's people. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Mr. Kiir began his remarks by greeting all South Sudanese at home and abroad in refugee camps and sheltering inside UN bases. He made a point of including the rebels who government forces fought in the 20-month conflict in his greeting.
As the leaders of and citizens of this country, this is the time for us to come together despite our political differences, which made us fall apart and brought too much sufferings, humiliations and great damage to our country.
But then he took on a different tone, insisting that he still has reservations with the peace deal that IGAD spent nearly 2 years putting together. Mr. Kiir says he only signed the deal after coming under intense pressure to do so.
Because I put the interests of my people and country first, I refused to succumb to the pressures which was mounted on me by IGAD, the Troika, AU, and those who wanted to run the affairs of our country by remote controls from their capitals. To show my disappointment in the way IGAD handled the mediation process, I protested loudly, stating that the IGAD proposed compromise peace agreement is not neither a Holy Bible nor Quran, and it should be opened up for negotiations.
The president says one of the biggest points of contention that he has with the deal is that it maintains divisions in South Sudan's main political party, the SPLM. He says the IGAD Plus mediation team ignored an effort in Arusha at the end of the year to reunify the SPLM, which is split into different factions when South Sudan plunged into conflict in December 2013.
This IGAD prescribed peace document on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan is the most divisive and unprecedented peace deal ever seen in history of our country and the African continent at large. The objective and spirit of the Arusha Agreement have unfortunately been undermined by some of the provisions and modalities of the agreement.
Mr. Kiir also slammed the peace deal for undermining South Sudan's sovereignty. In particular, the president railed against a provision in the deal calling for an independent monitoring and evaluation committee to be set up to make sure the peace deal is being respected, and another that calls for Juba and other state capitals to be demilitarized.
It is not only against the sovereignty of South Sudan, but it is a clear testimony that there is no genuine agreement reached so far among the parties concerned, except an imposed peace deal. And therefore, the element of fear and not genuine peace is highly predictable.
But Mr. Kiir says that in spite of his reservations, his government will abide by the peace agreement.
With that signature, I had fully committed myself and the government to the faithful implementation of the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. All the institutions of government in the country shall be bound by this agreement and shall be expected to carry out the functions stipulated for them therein.
He says he believes that the deal could bring lasting peace to South Sudan and could end once and for all the seemingly incessant rivalry for the highest position in the land, the presidency.
The challenge of many SPLM leaders has always been the desperation of everybody to be the flag bearer of the SPLM in the presidential elections. Implementing the provisions of this agreement of the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan in letter and spirit will finally put this challenge to an end.
Mr. Kiir called on South Sudanese to rally behind him and his government as they implement the deal. But he warned that the road ahead will not always be smooth.
The implementation of some provisions of the agreement will be confronted by practical difficulties that will make it inevitable to review or amend such provisions. This is certainly required degree of mutual trust and patience among the South Sudanese actors and stakeholders to overcome such challenges.
Mr. Kiir signed the peace agreement on August 26th. 9 days after Riek Machar signed on behalf of the main armed opposition, and Bagana Moom signed on behalf of a group of former political detainees. When he added his signature to the agreement, Mr. Kiir also annexed a list of 16 reservations he had with the deal. That drew an angry response from the international community, particularly the United States and the United Nations, which threatened to impose targeted sanctions on South Sudanese leaders and an arms embargo if the deal was not adhered to without conditions. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Officials from the government and Machar's opposition group are continuing a series of workshops in Addis Ababa on how to ensure that a ceasefire is respected in South Sudan. The workshops began on Sunday and will run until tomorrow. High on the agenda are security arrangements during a transitional period in South Sudan and the demilitarization of Juba. Both are points, as we just heard, that caused President Kiir to bristle when he signed the agreement. South Sudan's Deputy Foreign Minister, Peter Bashir Bendi, spoke with VOA reporter Iskander Freyo about what the government is expecting from the 5 days of discussions in the Ethiopian capital.
Because the workshop is supposed to be the operationalization, to be for the operationalization of the permanent ceasefire. We were supposed to discuss the disposition of the forces, the disengagement of forces, creation of buffer zones, withdrawal routes, and we are supposed also to discuss issues to do with the transitional security arrangements, the formation of the joint integrated police in the national capital, the formation of the unified command of the army during the pre-transitional period, and then the process of reunification of forces that will take about 18 months. This is what the workshop is all about, and the workshop is supposed to establish also a monitoring and verification mechanism for the monitoring of the permanent ceasefire arrangement, so that if in case of any violation, they will be able to, that mechanism will work and identify those who are violating the ceasefire arrangements.
We understand that there will be a 3 months pre-transitional period before the formation of the transitional government of national unity. Have we already entered that phase?
Definitely. The pre-transitional period starts from the date of the signature of the agreement. I think we signed, our president signed on the 26th, and you count from there. Definitely the 3 months will, after the pre-transitional period, after the 3 months, we expect the formation, because as a government we are already way ahead. And as soon as the agreement was signed in Juba, the following day, our president declared a permanent ceasefire, and which our forces are observing very strictly. And after that, the agreement was taken to the parliament for ratification. As we speak today, the government has gone way ahead in terms of implementation.
Freyo also spoke with the deputy chief negotiator for Machar's SPLM in opposition. Diouma Tok says participants at the workshop are not seeing eye to eye on everything, but altogether the discussions are moving in the right direction.
We believe that the Juba should be demilitarized. The all forces should be deployed outside Juba, except three categories. That is the presidential guard, which is going also to be joined together, and then the guards, which are supposed to protect the military installations and the warehouses, and then the joint police forces. The government and the mediation, they are telling us different things. They believe that the other forces, they should be there and remain in Juba. The police should remain, and then the national security should remain.
So you have not even agreed on number regarding numbers?
For us, that issue, it has not been critical for the SPLM. SPLA can go on with any number according to the task which is supposed to be given to those forces. We comply with the proposal of the mediation. They propose a battalion for the presidential guard. We accept it. We say that we don't have any problem. But our concern is composition of those forces. We believe that the forces should be divided equally. If it is a battalion, then this battalion should be divided equally.
That was South Sudan's Deputy Foreign Minister Peter Bashir Gwendi and SPLM in opposition negotiator Dioma Tok speaking with Iskander Freo from Addis Ababa. The two main parties to South Sudan's recently ended conflict are attending a series of workshops led by IGAD on security, demilitarization, and how to maintain ceasefire in South Sudan. Central Equatoria State Caretaker Governor Juma Ali Malou yesterday formed a committee to investigate violence that broke out last Thursday in Lanya County. An exchange of gunfire prompted thousands of civilians to flee the area. Hesti Nyokwe is the Central Equatoria State Minister of Cabinet Affairs. He says the shooting incident has led to a humanitarian crisis in Lanya. He says a 15-member committee will
assess the humanitarian crisis in Lanya, plus taking some food items that the government will provide for a short term, which could be about 10 days. Meanwhile, appealing to the international humanitarian organizations based here in Juba to do assessment and provide a comprehensive humanitarian support.
A group of unknown gunmen reportedly attacked government soldiers stationed in Lanya late last week. Yokwe says the attack triggered a heavy barrage of gunfire between the two groups in Wanduruba village. He says it is unclear how many casualties resulted from the fighting. There are fears that some civilians were killed in the crossfire as they tried to escape the gunshots. Juma Skopas is the SPLM secretary in Lanya. He says the attackers were rebels.
As I talk now, there is no NGO that has come to rescue civilians on the ground. Only that our people in the community decided to bring their own food that they are using to feed themselves and are trying to help with the other brothers.
Skopa says although government forces are in control of the area, calm has not yet returned to Wanduruba village. Yokwe says thousands of civilians have been displaced by the recent fighting and need help.
Up to yesterday, we were informed that about 6,000 IDPs, internal displaced people who came from Wanduruba, have reached Lanya, and this caused a serious humanitarian alarm. The committee will then make some findings as to what were the causes of this incident and the extent of the damage that has happened, particularly if there's any damage to our citizens in Wanduruba Bayam, so that they can be able now to bring a comprehensive report to our government for appropriate response.
Skopas is calling on humanitarian organizations to intervene.
There are people who suffered injuries, and of course others lost their lives. In the first place, we received 7 people who died, and on the other side is about 11. All of them are 19.
Skopas says more internally displaced persons are still arriving in the town of Lanya from Wanduruba village. He says the fighting between the two sides continued for 3 days. Waki Simon Wudu compiled this report from Juba. A group of nearly 100 women in Western Bahr El Ghazal are working on a church project called Solidarity with South Sudan. They gathered today at Palika Pastoral Hall in the state capital, Wau, to launch a workshop on how women can be major players in promoting peace. They say it is particularly important to them since they suffered the most during the last 20 months of conflict. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from WOW.
The women activists here believe that ending all forms of violence against women, both at home and in the larger community, South Sudan can be transformed into a peaceful nation. Members of the group believe that just as a woman's body nurtures and protects a baby in a womb for 9 months, women can be very effective in protecting peace in their community if they are not constantly buried by violence caused by men. Sisakati Arata, one of the organizers of the 5-day workshop, says South Sudanese women are already building momentum for what she describes as a wake-up call to silence the guns and find their dignity.
We're at a time in history when women are awakening to their own dignity and when women can reflect on the pain and the suffering and the work they have done as slaves almost, but that's changing little by little. And to see the enthusiasm of women as they realize that they were made for something other than hard work. It's not that they're not willing to do hard work, but there's more to life, and also the privilege of sending children to school, the privilege and the occupation, especially girls.
Sister Annette Saint Amour, another organizer, says women teach that peace starts at home.
What do children do or families do when there are quarrels, when there are conflicts? How are those managed? Many women do that naturally. They seem to be peacemakers. So as they become aware, sometimes people do it and they're not even aware, but as they become more aware of what they're already doing in their homes, I think that will flow over into the community.
Organizers believe that if women across the country embrace peace, their husbands will learn by example. In most South Sudanese communities, a woman has no say in matters regarding the family or the clan. Men beating their wives is often seen as the right of husbands. Activist Jacqueline Joseph wants South Sudan's government to recognize that domestic abuse is wrong and those men should be arrested.
No man should beat a woman. In our community, men beat their wives even if they are pregnant. And this is wrong. We should give rights to a woman, even a child in this country.
Activist Celestina Fedrick's goal is to allow women and children get an education. She believes that is the only way South Sudan can have lasting peace.
Instead of saying women are not educated, it's good for men to encourage and help them to go and finish their education. Instead of cursing them, they are not educated, they are just in the lower level, which is not good. I'm not happy with that. So let our man encourage us, helping us to finish our education.
Mama Clara, another one of the women carriers of life and peace, says men in Africa need to end their belief that paying an exorbitant dowry means a woman becomes their property, their slave.
There is one thing that I have benefited from in this workshop. It's when a man thinks that I have married this woman with a lot of dowry, I am above her. This is what is not creating peace at all. Men must forget about that and give freedom to their wives.
In South Sudanese communities, it is not uncommon for a potential husband to pay 200 cows as dowry, sometimes without the consent of the woman or girl involved. Some girls married off at the age of 12, even though it is against the law. Child brides often experience life-threatening health complications, long-term poverty, and little hope for education or a future. Workshop organizers hope to change that by building a promising future not only for girls and women, but all members of society. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WOW.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we'll look at IOM's efforts to vaccinate South Sudanese against cholera. That story is coming up when we return back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle failure?
When I was sitting for my exam, I failed in geography. I was not happy. But for a short time, I have talked to myself that, hi, what's wrong with you? Are you the only girl who failed in the world?
Failure is like saying you can do it again, like there is a chance that it can be better.
They said failure is always a way forward to your success. Of course, you know, with failures, it's not that once you fail today, you have to give up immediately. It's giving you that you should even continue to seek, you know, to suffer and make sure that you get what exactly you wanted.
I handle failure by realizing the downfall of a person is not the end of his life, and it's not how much you fall because you must fall one day, but how much you struggle to wake up.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we talk about how overcrowded conditions it comes for internally displaced persons and the rainy season have prompted two cholera vaccination campaigns in South Sudan. IOM Health Program Manager Hailey West tells VOA's Kim Lewis that thousands of South Sudanese were vaccinated in August and September.
IOM conducted the oral cholera vaccination campaign in both the Bentiu Protection of Civilian site, which is in Unity State, as well as we were the lead for the oral cholera vaccination campaign in Malakal Protection of Civilian site, which is in Upper Nile State in South Sudan.
How many people were involved in these campaigns in terms of receiving the vaccinations?
In terms of receiving the vaccination, in total, the number of people that we say that benefited was 113,600 internally displaced persons, and that's in both camps.
What is their present health condition?
The internally displaced people who are living in both Bentiu and Malakal POC face a number of environmental challenges in terms of things that may affect their health. When we look at prevention, we want to look at ensuring that they have access to clean water and that they have access to proper spacing of shelters, that they have access to preventative measures such as mosquito nets. Here in South Sudan, malaria is endemic, and we have particularly one of the worst types or strains of malaria. We have P. falciparum, and right now, most of the population is being affected by higher rates of malaria in both of those two sites because it is the rainy season, which means more stagnant water around the homes, which means that it's a breeding ground for mosquitoes, which are the vectors for malaria.
During times like this, how are the most vulnerable people, the children, the elderly, the babies, pregnant women, how are they faring in these types of conditions?
I think humanitarians for sure focus on the vulnerable individuals within the site. As health partners, we work with other clusters, the protection cluster, the WASH cluster, to ensure that those who are more vulnerable have access and that we go out of our way to be proactive in reaching elderly people who may not be able to leave their shelters to seek care at the health facility. So there's a whole range of interventions that are in place, including health promotion, where we have outreach workers that go out into the community spreading key messages about how to keep yourself safe from diarrheal diseases or malaria, any waterborne disease, for instance. So that's one of the ways that we reach out to some of the community members who might not be able to come to the health facility. And there's a referral process as well for that. For small children, we really focus on the women in the families. They are the sort of the foundation of the health and access to education and these types of things. We focus on making sure that they are aware of the services that are available and that they receive the services for the children, that they are encouraged to come for routine vaccinations for measles and polio, particularly for the oral cholera vaccinations, the social mobilization that happens to ensure that the mothers in the family understood the importance of this as a critical preventative tool that we have in our tool bag as health practitioners and public health advocates. But that, at the same time, it's not the cure-all for all diarrheal diseases. The oral vaccination for cholera is specifically for cholera, so we have to make sure that they still understand good sanitation and hygiene practices and that, you know, these soft components, the behavior change, is oftentimes the most critical but the hardest to get the community to accept sometimes.
So given this is a process of continuing to educate the families.
Correct. I would say sensitization of the families, specifically the women and the youth. I would say the youth play a really important role as well. In many of these sites, you know, they are looking for something to contribute to, and they've been a really important factor in our own outreach, engaging the youth, not only to spread the messages among themselves, but also to reach out to other parts of the community.
That was Hailey West, IOM Health Program Manager, speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis from Juba yesterday. A South Sudanese Equatorian Community Association is celebrating its 15-year anniversary. Members of the association recently gathered in southern U.S. city of Louisville, Kentucky. Leaders of the group say the organization is playing an important role in maintaining cultural identity among South Sudanese in the diaspora and promoting unity in their home country. South Sudan in Focus reporter Ayane Buer has more from Washington.
ESCA leadership decided this year to award 6 scholarships to association-affiliated high school seniors to help them buy books and basic supplies for college. ESCA was originally founded by Equatorians in the diaspora who wanted to have an organization that helps Equatorian refugees. It now has 25 chapters across the United States. ESCA President Kwaje Lasu says the theme of this year's conference is Awake Equatoria.
It's not necessarily that Equatoria has been sleeping. However, it's just a call for Equatorians to start getting up, and rather than being a sideline, need to get involved in the issues of our country.
Lasu does not want Equatorians to be on the sidelines of efforts to implement the recently signed peace agreement by both warring parties. But Lasu says another purpose of the association is to work with young South Sudanese living abroad. He says at the annual conference, questions about culture and education are often brought up.
How can we advocate for strengthening our children's education in this country, and how can we bridge with our people back home?
About 300 adults and 75 children attended this year's conference in Kentucky. They participated in traditional song and dance. Lasu says conference goers come year after year because they want to meet other American South Sudanese trying to hold on to their traditions.
This is what bound us, our heritage, our culture, our tradition, because coming to this world, if we're not careful, we can easily sidetrack or even forget our culture. What are the common core value of South Sudan in general? We are trying to aspire to see that continue for our kids in this country and generation to come.
Lasu says his association will continue to work on community development and empowering women by raising money for educational opportunities and hosting community events throughout the year. Lasu says people in South Sudan depend on them to do this work so that they can eventually help people back home.
If you talk to anybody on the ground in South Sudan today, they will tell you specifically, you guys out there are our future. We want you guys to come back and help build this country. Whatever's happening back home, it touches us here, and that's the challenge to our community as well. So this is where SKUSA come in as a medium between our community and the United States and our people back home.
As Secretary General for ESCA, Benjamin Okuka tries to make his organization's goals become reality. He says the conference also gives participants a chance to take pride in their heritage.
And equally as important, it allows us to sync up or understand what's happening on the ground. Most of our diaspora brothers and sisters are, as most Americans are, very busy with their daily lives and do their best to keep up with what's happening on the ground, but they necessarily don't do that consistently.
Okuka says the signing of the peace deal last month allowed participants to focus on the future of their country. He says it's critical that all South Sudanese come together to ensure that the transitional government of national unity is successful.
We get an opportunity to reset and to take another shot at really establishing the South Sudan that we all aspire and dream for and have fought for and has shed tremendous amount of blood to realize.
For VOA News, I'm Ayane Buer. In Washington.
And that report by Ayane brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.